we need to all stand together, be strong, be true to ourselves.
Welcome to the Telling It Our Way podcast. I'm Allie.
And I'm Becca.
In this podcast, we bring you stories by disabled people about disabled people. Stories from the daily lives of self-advocates with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
These are real people with complicated lives. They don't want your pity, and they do not exist to inspire you.
This is not inspiration porn.
Hey, Allie.
Hey, Becca.
We have a really fun show today. It's all about building community.
But what do we mean by that, Becca? I mean, we talk about engaging in our communities and taking care of our communities, but what on earth do we actually mean by that? And what does it take to actually build one?
Ooh, this is such a good question. I think sometimes in like disability spaces, when people say things like getting in the community or something like that, sometimes all that sounds like or looks like is like going to the grocery store. That is not what we mean by community here, right? So, you know, communities, we mean the people that you gather around you and that support you. It's not just about being in a specific place. It's about feeling like you belong.
So building that is so much harder than it kind of sounds when we first say it. But our community here at Telling It Our Way in season 3 has been expanding with our storytellers coming from all over the country. And our first storyteller today, do you like this pivot that I just made, Becca? Is actually...
Ooh, what a segue.
Is actually our first international guest. Paul comes to us from Canada with this story.
I am Paul Saka. And the story takes place in a school called H.D. Cartwright School. And in the year was 2001, 2002. I had so many friends during those years when I was a kid. That is, there were bullies there, and there was a lot of friends that I have had throughout the years and in school that were being bullied. And I think that having friends is good. Having to be bullied is not good. I think that bullying is something that is not okay to be bullied.
Will you tell me the story about how you stood up to the bullies who were bullying your other friends then?
Well, I stood up to them because I wanted to tell the principal about it. I wanted to tell the teachers about it. Because bullying is something that is very good for people to stand up for each other. We need to stand up for each other because bullying in reality in life is not good for the planet. I also wrote the letter to the bullies, asking them to not hurt friends and to not hurt them, you know. And so the moment I gave the letter to the bullies, they took it, they read it, and they just tear it up for a purpose and for a reason that I don't know of. What happened was that I had to just stand up to them by running to the principal and to tell the principal about the boys and what they were doing. And that is what I did. The reason why I wanted to stand up to friends like this is because friends who are mine should really know the true facts of being friends and should be able to speak up for him or herself to know what it's like being bullied the way that I was treated when I was over very small. The way that I got bullied was not easy. There were friends or bullies out there who were a part of the outside world. They came upon me and saw me getting on the bus or something like that, calling me to the school, making up behind me or doing something like that, I had to tell the teachers, tell the principal, things like that. When they come to a organization like Canadian Deaf Children's Society, the way that they stand up is to like, we wear our pink shirt to show our love and our support to the people who are outside of our circle or out of there or out in the outside world, you know, to really show them that we are not scared, not afraid of them, you know. We need to really show people that we should not be like them. We need to all be friends. It's very, very natural to be scared and afraid. I'm trying to say that that being scared or afraid is way too high. It's the feeling inside of you. It's the inside that counts, that needs to be shown to the outside world. But the importance of sharing this story is because I believe that people and things and friends or not, all people should understand about four different aspects. There are like the aspects are love, and there's honesty, respect, and to care for everyone out there in the whole nationwide world out there. The only thing I wanted to add is that friends that I had made throughout the years, around the years, like from the time when I was little until now, all of the friends that I used to see really should be able to plead for the love of peace, to please just come back to the old and young Carl Sager, because I love them, I care for them, I want them to come back, because I care for them, I want to see them here again. There's a whole wide world out there that I have been through more than enough. This world needs to be set right. It needs to be set free from pain in heart. I have a heart of pain to know that there's a world of friends out there that I have had from baseball in my community, from elementary school, and so on. All of those friends, the younger friends that I used to have, should be able to reach out to me. And they are not reaching out to me anymore. They have moved on. And so I just don't know what to do here.
Well, maybe, Paul, maybe some of them will hear the show and they'll reach out afterward.
We need to all stand together, be strong, be true to ourselves.
So, when Paul first approached us, when he told us he was interested in telling this story about bullying, you know, part of me was like, oh, you know, I know that story. It's about him being bullied, right? I thought that was what we were getting into.
Right, right. The disabled kid getting teased and abused on the playground, or the disabled adult getting abused or slighted in the workplace. And some studies tell us that kids with disabilities are 2 or 3 times more likely to be bullied than their able-bodied counterparts. It's a really common experience.
But when we started talking to Paul, who, again, just to celebrate, is our first international guest ever. But when we first started talking to Paul, it became really clear that's not the story that he wanted to tell. He's got a different story to tell, right? So he's giving us a whole different kind of story about seeing other people being bullied and about him being the one to defend others and reaching out to this bully to try to, you know, make it clear kind of who these people were and how he was hurting them, and then how to, you know, express himself on behalf of his community. And, you know, I think it's a really interesting story to tell, because I think sometimes we think we know the stories that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities have to tell, especially around bullying. And it pushes back against these stereotypes around people as in need of protection, right? Which, you know, sometimes leads to overprotection or assumptions of always needing help or pity, all of these things that we've talked about before. But here we've got this story about Paul showing that he's the contributor. He's the protector. He's the person who's making that community, right? It's not about, you know, inviting him into a community. It's about him forming that community himself.
I just want to add that if any of our listeners are looking for resources around disability and bullying, one resource out there is from PACER. So www.pacer.org/bullying/info/students-with-disabilities. We will link that in our show notes so that people can find it.
And Paul also does a whole lot of advocacy and awareness raising around disability and bullying through the Canadian Down Syndrome Society, which is how we were connected to begin with. And so if you want to read Paul's blog or learn more about those resources, you can go to cdss.ca.
Our next storyteller may be able to relate to Paul a bit here, too. Marco tells us of his experience growing up feeling different, being treated as different, and then the added struggle of finding community as an adult after COVID. Let's listen.
I got burned out on the bar scene a few years ago. I needed to take a break from being social for a while because of it. And honestly, it couldn't have come at a better time, because COVID shut everything down not long after that. Now I had all the time in the world to work on myself and figure out what I wanted to do with my life. So I enrolled in college classes online and started working toward a four-year degree. I also took a driver's ed course and started preparing for the road test so I could earn my driver's license. I've always loved them, and I'd like to think that I understand them better than I've ever liked or understood other guys. I've known for the longest time that I don't really act the way a normal guy would. I don't have very many normal guy friends, and I don't really do a lot of normal guy stuff. Even now, my closest friends are women. My upbringing has played a part in that. I was a bit of a mama's boy growing up. My mom grew up in coastal down East Maine. She learned to be self-sufficient at an early age, helping a single mother raise her two younger brothers and doing everything she could to make money, whether it was stinging clams or working in a wreath factory. My dad had a more traditional upbringing out of state as the sixth out of seven kids, and being a bit older than my mom, it was a different time when he was young. Guys his age weren't really encouraged to talk about their feelings back then. Growing up with autism and ADHD, I tried hard to make sense of the world around me, and I just could not understand why people were awful to me and each other. I had always had a hard time being able to handle not being liked back then. I've always wanted to be more self-assured like my mom and not care so much about what other people think of me like my dad. And I'd like to think I finally got where I want to be on that one. I met my best friend in the summer of 2019 at a local bar during a karaoke contest. About a year and a half ago, she was posting online about going to belly dance classes. So I reached out to her and I said, "You look like you're really enjoying yourself doing this. I'd like to join you and get in on some of that." I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I just knew it was a way for me to reconnect with a friend and try something new that would give me a chance to be social again and meet new people. But I have to admit, I enjoyed myself taking belly dance classes for the first time. I wasn't afraid of looking foolish doing it, and I surprised myself with how quickly I picked everything up. Even though belly dance is usually seen as something that mostly women do, there are some men who do it too. Obviously, it's going to look a bit different when I'm practicing the moves I'm learning in class, and that's something I really had to work at. It's very tempting for me to throw my whole body in the moves too hard to try to compensate for parts of me that I don't have as much of to work with right now. Sometimes I just need to find my center, remember to breathe, and remind myself why I'm doing what I'm doing, even if I need a little help getting out of my own head long enough to see the progress I've made since I've started. I had no way of knowing at the time, but taking belly dance classes became one of those one thing leads to another kind of deals for me. I mean, my dance and fitness journey had to start somewhere, and it was opening me up to new opportunities and encouraged me to start taking chances and try new things again. Not long after I started taking belly dance classes, I decided to start doing some cardio. Then I decided to get off my butt and do some yoga. That was the wake-up call I needed for me to realize how out of shape I've gotten, because I'd allowed myself to get to that point. I also began to realize through taking dance classes with my best friend how much we had in common. Being neurodivergent, I've bounced around quite a few different groups of friends in life, trying to fit in and feel like I actually belong somewhere. Taking dance classes with my best friend somewhere new in town gave me the time and the space and the creative freedom I needed to embrace my strange and explore my feminine side in ways that I hadn't before. Meeting such supportive and non-judgmental people who truly accept me and all that makes me who I am made me feel so free. I could relax knowing I didn't have to hide parts of myself from them because I didn't think anyone else would understand. When my best friend invited me to watch our dance class friends perform in a burlesque show, how could I say no to that? I fell in love with the glitz and the glamour of this crazy, shimmering world, seeing women of all shapes and sizes sharing the stage that night. As fate would have it, when I flew out to Washington, D.C. the following week, I was grabbing breakfast at a nearby Dunkin' that morning when I heard Murder on the Dance Floor come on over the sound system, and I knew right away where I remembered it from. I feel like this was a sign that made me realize this was something I wanted to do. So after I came back home from Washington, D.C., I finally started taking burlesque classes and began to learn the art of the tea, so to speak, and all of the skills that I needed to have to put on a good show for the crowd that way. I was really enjoying myself, learning how to do everything from the bump and the grind and giving that seductive come-hither look to slowing myself down and working my way up to the big reveal as I make disrobing look sexy while stripping myself down to my bare essentials. In essence, pasties. I've always been a sucker for nostalgia, so I embraced the 50s housewife aesthetic from that golden age of Hollywood in the beginning. The polka dot dress, the pearl necklace, garters, stockings, all that stuff. It was very easy for me to step into a service role character like a 50s housewife who deferred to everyone else while I was still new to this world and learning my way around in dance class. A few months later, my best friend was asked to start teaching femdom burlesque. I knew she would have fun with it. I just didn't realize how badly I needed her class, too. It would have been too easy for me to let everyone else in class boss me around and blow off some steam if that was what they needed. But that's the recovering doormat in me talking. I was having way too much fun learning to be naughty in femdom burlesque as I began to claim and own my newfound power and control in this situation, dressing myself in leather and fishnets and using whips and chains as props. When a local dance troupe announced it was holding auditions, I wasn't really expecting much of anything to come of it. I was mostly just happy to be there, and it gave me a chance to show off what I had learned in dance class up to that point. So you can imagine my surprise when I found out I got picked and that the dance troupe was willing to work with me and help me get places so I could perform with them. I did 4 shows in about 6 months while traveling with the dance troupe. I was very proud of myself and how I did during that time. Performing on stage with other strong, empowered women gave me such incredible thrills, and it made me feel like I could do anything. Then from there, I began to take an interest in learning how to be a drag queen. Knowing how small and tight-knit the local drag community is near me, I kind of had to dig around a little bit to figure out what I needed to do to get started. In a city like Bangor, with a population of just over 32,000, you kind of have to know where to look in this situation, because they don't always come right out and tell you when opportunities like that will come along, unless you're already in with that crowd and you're out there looking for them. I don't know how else to describe it, but learning to be a drag queen and doing burlesque just opened up a whole other world to me, beyond looking and dressing the part. I love throwing myself into this character that I've come up with for my performances. I've even learned to be okay leaving the house as this character, and in broad daylight, no less. Then when I would come home from these performances, it was a struggle for me to come down from that euphoric high afterwards. Like, I really didn't want to have to take everything off and go back to being Marco again. So lately, I've had to ask myself if I'm content just looking and dressing the part for entertainment purposes, or if I want to explore this side of me a bit more to see how far I want to go with it. I have to be honest, when I see this adorable chubby redhead woman staring back at me where a dark-haired man is standing, it just does something to me. It's awakened something deep inside of me, And it's telling me I need to take this leap of faith and give this a fair chance to be sure that this is what I really want.
Oh man, I really appreciate Marco's story here. Part of what I appreciate is just like the bravery that he shows, being able to just find a new class that he's interested in and then go to it. It would take me months to work up that courage. It takes a lot of guts. And then I really appreciate hearing Marco's story because we don't get a whole lot of stories about people with IDD and queer or LGBTQI communities and spaces.
Yeah, and to ask questions and to ask to join even more communities, and in this case, the drag and burlesque communities, even if he was unsure how he would fit in, that is really impressive. And Becca, like you, I think I would be thinking about it for a year or two before I even had the guts to walk in a door. Becca, I'm going to flip the script today. Guess what I have for us?
What do you have, Allie?
Well, I don't have statistics per se, but I do have some research.
Oh, go for it. Okay, I'm so excited.
Nathan Wilson and his colleagues published a scoping review of the literature around those with IDD and the LGBTQI identification in 2018. And they noted that we don't really have any concrete stats about how many people identify at this particular intersection. But they did note that the ways that narrative and qualitative research point to how those in this intersection actually feel doubly marginalized. So Vemal Ramaswamy and his colleagues found similar themes of marginalization in their 2021 study. And then a 2024 study by Alan Santinelli Martino and colleagues found that some of this marginalization for people with IDD comes from the difficulty in navigating queer spaces specifically.
Allie, could you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by doubly marginalized here?
Well, I think that we might make, let's say, a space for people with IDD that doesn't take into account their sexuality or their queerness. And so they show up in those spaces and then they feel like they have to leave a part of themselves out the door, right? Or that in the case of the Martin Santinelli article, it's about people with IDD trying to navigate queer spaces and those queer spaces not taking into account the needs of somebody with IDD. And so having to leave that part of themselves out the door, just feeling excluded.
Sure, right. And this makes some sense, right? Given how both of these communities have been stigmatized and marginalized. And in some ways that could lead to, you know, even this kind of like horizontal oppression or hostility or not wanting to be associated with each other or just not thinking to associate with each other. And you know, in some ways, both groups trying to distance themselves in order to access more or different resources. You know, and certainly we have these histories where queer people were treated as having disabilities. And, you know, going back to that discussion around gatekeeping or overprotection, we also have these histories of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities being prevented from or not given the opportunity to explore their identity or their sexuality for a lot of reasons.
Well, I love that Marco is breaking down the barriers between some of these communities as he explores his own identity and interests and builds community.
Builds community? That's the name of the episode. I'm sorry, everyone.
Sorry.
So before we end, I just want to thank our contributors, Paul and Marco, our associate producer, Connor Smenner, and our Telling It Our Way advisory board members, Jarita Fox, Quinn Thomas, and Gavin Daly.
And a special thanks to WGTE and our producer, Chris Pfeiffer.
To access transcripts for this show and any other show notes, please visit WGTE.org/ourway.
I'm Allie Day.
And I'm Becca Monsalione. And you've been listening to Telling It Our Way.
WGTE. Voices around us.